You know, what if everything we are currently doing in artificial intelligence is just, I mean, just a massive dead end?
Wow.
Like, what if instead of actually building digital minds, we are basically just engineering massive digital black holes?
Right. Yeah. It is a terrifying thought. But when you look closely at the underlying architecture of current AI systems, that comparison isn't just poetic or metaphorical. It is mathematically literal. We
Wow.
might be building engines of collapse rather than, actual engines of thought.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking you on a journey into a radically different way of thinking about minds, mathematics, and machines. We're looking at an intense, incredibly uncompromising theoretical text simply titled MathWill.txt.
It's quite a read.
Yeah. And this text proposes a completely new framework called the MathWill Engine. It essentially argues that the way we measure and build intelligence today is, well, it's entirely backwards.
It is a phenomenal piece of theory. I mean, it doesn't just critique modern AI, it attempts to redefine what intelligence actually is at a fundamental thermodynamic level. It completely challenges the whole, Silicon Valley assumption that if we just scale up memory and processing speed, we will eventually spark true understanding.
To really wrap our heads around this, we are going to present the content as a timeline for you today. We're going to start with the historical background of human intelligence, like how our brains have functioned across thousands of years to get us to this point. Then we will examine the present-day crisis, like why modern AI is fundamentally hitting a wall. And finally, we'll end with the future prospects, the actual blueprint for a machine that can invent rather than just compute.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this. If you want to understand why current AI is architecturally failing, we first have to look back at our own human lineage. How did we get so smart in the first place?
Well, to answer that, the text introduces this foundational concept called stationarity detection. And this is the historical bedrock of intelligence.
Okay.
Think about the world we live in. It's dynamic, it's noisy, it's chaotic, isn't
Very
it?
chaotic, yeah.
But within that chaos, there are things that stay exactly the same, regardless of what happens around them. These are invariants.
So things that don't change even when the whole context changes.
Exactly. Think of the concept of the number 7. 7 apples, 7 rocks, 7 days. The objects change, but the sevenness is an invariant structure.
Oh, I see.
Or take the basic concept of causality. A toddler learns very early on that if they drop a plastic cup from their high chair, it hits the floor every time.
Yeah, my kitchen floor knows that one well.
Right. The room might be chaotic, the dog might be barking, but the law of gravity is stationary.
Right, it's like finding a solid rock in a rushing river. You can finally stand on it, you filter out all the noise, and you lock onto the signal.
Precisely. And the text argues that the very first mechanical operation of true intelligence is finding what remains constant across transformations. The text calls this shared foundation the stationary manifold.
This stationary manifold.
Yeah. Over thousands of years, ancient civilizations built up this mathematical and conceptual foundation. They created what the author calls attractor basins in theory space.
Wait, let's ground that a bit for those of us who, aren't theoretical physicists. Theory space and attractor basins. What are we actually talking about here?
Fair question. Yeah. Imagine theory space as a giant, infinite landscape of every possible idea, equation, or thought that could ever exist. Most of this landscape is just chaotic nonsense.
Okay.
But an attractor basin is like a deep, stable valley in that landscape. Once a civilization stumbles into that valley, the ideas are so incredibly coherent and useful that human thought naturally gravitates toward them and just stays there.
Okay, I see. So, like Euclidean geometry would be one of those deep valleys.
A perfect example, yes. Euclidean geometry was a massive attractor basin. It gave us rules for flat planes, angles, and lines that were so reliable it held human intellectual focus for, what, 2,000 years.
Wow,
It was
yeah.
a massive piece of stationary bedrock.
But here's where the text pivots, right?
Right.
Because just finding stable things isn't enough to explain how we went from banging rocks together to launching satellites. The author points out that an individual human is actually incredibly limited.
High limited.
An individual lifetime is short, and our individual memory is finite.
Right, and this is where we get into the concept of soft bit extension. The author argues that we have been asking the completely wrong question by looking at individual intelligence.
How so?
Well, a single human mind is not a complete intelligence. The true unit of intelligence is the
The
lineage.
lineage, so like the unbroken chain of humans over generations.
Exactly. When a parent teaches a child or, a mentor teaches a student, they are not just communicating, they are performing soft bit extension.
Soft bit extension.
Yeah, they are mathematically offloading their cognitive capacity onto a living biological substrate, the child who will persist after they are gone.
So human history is like a relay race, but instead of just passing a static baton, the baton actually grows and evolves every time it's handed off to the next runner.
That's a brilliant analogy. The growing baton captures the mechanism perfectly because the child, the next runner, is not a hard drive.
Right.
You can't just plug in a USB and write a file to a human brain. The child creatively reinterprets the knowledge. They take the foundational input, process it through their own biology, and generate their own compressed understanding.
Which completely solves one of the biggest headaches in computer science today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
The problem of catastrophic forgetting. In machine learning, if you train a neural network on a bunch of new data, it frequently just it overwrites its old connections and completely forgets how to do the old tasks.
Oh, wow.
It's a massive issue.
Yeah.
But human history bypasses this because we offload the old information onto the lineage.
Right. Because a child born today doesn't have to spend 30 years reinventing the wheel or, discovering that 2 + 2 = 4 or independently figuring out the laws of thermodynamics. They just inherit those stationarities from the past.
And because they inherit those stable coordinates, the baton, from your relay race, they don't have to waste their incredibly limited cognitive capacity relearning the basics.
They can just run.
Exactly. They can focus all their processing power, their bit depth, entirely on the frontier of the unknown. That is the genius of the human lineage. We are a layered learning system with shared storage stretching back to the dawn of civilization.
Okay, so if our human lineage figured out this brilliant architectural hack of passing down stable knowledge to avoid catastrophic forgetting, why didn't we build that into our computers? Like, how did we end up building these massive isolated server racks instead?
Well, that transition brings us to the present day in our timeline. We fell victim to what the text calls the storage illusion.
The storage illusion.
Yeah. Modern AI operates under the fundamental driving misapprehension that intelligence is just a matter of storing more bits of data and processing them faster.
And the math on this is wild, by the way. The text points out that the physical human brain only has about 2.5 petabytes of classical information storage.
Right.
That is a finite, hard biological limit. You can buy a single server rack today that holds way more than 2.5 petabytes. But no one is looking at a server rack in a data center and calling it a genius mathematician.
No, because the gap between storing data and actual comprehension
Yeah.
is not about quantity, it's a difference in kind. The text introduces a critical metric here called the Mathwill coefficient.
The Mathwill coefficient.
Right, which it represents with the Greek letter alpha. Alpha measures how much new information a system can generate per unit of stored information.
Okay, so let's break this alpha metric down because this feels like the crux of the whole argument.
Okay, if a system has an alpha of exactly one, it means the output equals the input. It generates no new information. It only retrieves what you already put into it.
So an alpha of one is just a really fancy filing cabinet.
Exactly. And current large language models, our most advanced AI today, fundamentally operate with an alpha of roughly one.
Wait, really? Just one.
Yeah. They are incredibly sophisticated pattern matching and compression engines. They can write a poem in the style of Shakespeare because they have ingested massive amounts of text, but they are ultimately just retrieving and recombining stored patterns. They aren't generating fundamentally new mathematical truths.
But a human mind.
A human mind has an alpha far, far greater than one because we generate exponentially more information than we could possibly ever store.
Right.
When Isaac Newton invented calculus, he wasn't just retrieving stored bits from his memory. He was inventing a new mathematical structure, a path through that theory space we talked about earlier that had literally never been taken.
But wait, let me push back on this 2.5 petabyte limit. Wait, what actually happens when a system runs out of storage space?
Right.
If the human brain is capped at 2.5 petabytes, shouldn't I be completely full by the time I'm 40? Like, if we are constantly taking in new info every single day, why doesn't my brain just hit a wall and start deleting my childhood memories to make room for my grocery list?
That is the perfect question, and it is the key to why current AI fails. Every finite system eventually hits its storage limit. The question is, what does the system do when it runs out of space?
Okay.
To explain this, the text brings in its most profound analogy, the black hole. In physics, there is a hard mathematical limit to how much information can be physically stored in a given region of space. It's known as the Bekenstein bound.
So physics dictates that you can only cram so much data into a specific volume. What happens when a star collapses and a black hole eats too much information and hits that physical limit?
It creates an event horizon.
Yeah.
When it hits the limit, nature's solution is to scramble and destroy the information. From the perspective of the outside universe, that information is gone. A black hole handles information overflow by collapsing into maximum entropy.
Wow.
So if an alpha of one is your filing cabinet.
An alpha of zero is a paper shredder. It's an engine of destruction.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the author outlines three operating regimes for any information system. The subcritical regime is normal operation, plenty of storage space. Mm. You memorize a phone number, no problem.
Sure.
The critical regime is when the system reaches its absolute storage limit. Classical systems, like our current AI, compress data, approximate, and eventually collapse at this limit. They lack the architectural capacity for the third regime, the supercritical.
And that collapse in AI, we literally have a word for it. We call it hallucination.
Exactly. When you ask a current AI a complex problem that exceeds its stored bit depth, it doesn't step into the supercritical regime and invent a new mathematical truth. It guesses.
Right.
Produces confident nonsense. That is a literal thermodynamic information collapse, just like a black hole, because the system has no mechanism to generate true novelty. It just scrambles the data.
I really want to highlight this for you listening because it fundamentally changes how you look at the technology we use every single day. Every time you see an AI chatbot confidently lie to you, like making up a fake legal case or inventing a fake historical battle, you aren't just seeing a temporary bug that Silicon Valley will fix next year by feeding it more data.
No, you're not.
You are watching a system that lacks free will collapsing into entropy at its bit depth limit. It's an architectural impossibility for it to do anything else.
Because when a human mind hits its 2.5 petabyte limit, we don't form event horizon.
Correct.
We don't just start spitting out random scrambled nonsense. At the absolute limit of our storage, a human mind invokes a choice.
A choice.
It invokes what the author calls free will, or specifically in this context, math will. It invents.
Math will. The ability to generate entirely new information at the limit to have an alpha greater than one instead of just collapsing into a black hole. So this brings us to the third part of our timeline. If current AI is fundamentally architecturally doomed to act like a hallucinating black hole at its limits, what is the fix? What is the blueprint for a machine that can actually jump to that supercritical regime and invent alongside us?
This is where the text proposes the math will engine. And rather than just slapping more processors together, the author outlines a highly specific causal architecture. It requires four distinct components working in sequence to allow a machine to transcend its own bit depth.
Okay, let's trace how this machine would actually think. First, it needs to know what is real and stable, right?
Correct. So component one is the stationarity detector. Before a system can invent, it has to find the bedrock. It mathematically scans incoming data, specifically looking for invariants, things that don't change.
Yay.
It's extracting the two-ness from a picture of two apples and two blocks. It builds a map of stable coordinates, just like human civilizations did.
But just knowing facts isn't enough. To avoid becoming a black hole, the machine has to know its own physical limits. It needs to feel its own memory filling up.
Exactly, which triggers component two, the bit depth monitor. The system has to constantly track its own information load. It needs precise internal awareness of when it is approaching its Bekenstein bound, its capacity limit, because that limit is the trigger for action.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Component three. When the bit depth monitor sounds the alarm and says, "Warning, we are at capacity," the system doesn't guess or hallucinate. It triggers the free will activator.
Yes.
The text says this component makes a creative choice guided by an aesthetic filter. But I really have to push back here. How on earth do you code aesthetics into a machine? Are we talking about a robot painting a picture or something else?
It sounds abstract, but it is a profoundly mechanical concept.
Yeah.
In the context of mathematical theory space, aesthetics has nothing to do with painting landscapes. In mathematics, aesthetics means elegance, fruitfulness, and coherence.
Okay, elegance in math. What does that actually look like? Like an equation that is incredibly short but explains a massively complex system.
Precisely. EFISEP is deeply aesthetic. Minimal complexity, maximal structure.
Okay.
Fruitfulness means a generation that naturally leads to new questions and enables further discoveries rather than a dead end. And coherence means it perfectly fits with the existing stationarities we found in component one. So the aesthetic filter is a mathematical scoring system. It is the interface between cold, deterministic computation, and warm, creative intention.
Okay, I follow the scoring system, but how do you actually train a machine to care about elegance? How do you force it to develop a threshold for invention rather than just throwing its digital hands up and hallucinating when it hits a wall?
The text suggests a radical training method. You cannot train this engine by feeding it more standard data. Instead, you intentionally expose it to impossible problems. You feed it paradoxes.
Give me an example of an impossible problem.
The classic example is Russell's paradox. It was a crisis in mathematics in the early 20th century. A simplified version is the barber paradox. Imagine a town with only one barber. The rule is that the barber shaves all those and only those who do not shave themselves.
Okay.
So, does the barber shave himself? If he does shave himself, then he violates the rule because he only shaves those who don't. But if he doesn't shave himself, then according to the rule, he must shave himself.
Oh, man, my brain just short-circuited. It's an infinite loop.
Exactly. A standard AI fed that paradox, hits an infinite loop, runs out of bit depth, hits the critical limit, and collapses into a hallucination. It breaks.
Right.
But to train a MathWheel engine, you force it into that supercritical regime repeatedly. You teach it that when it hits that loop, the required output is not a retrieval of old data, and it isn't a random guess. The required output is to invent a novel structure that steps outside the paradox, a structure that scores high on elegance and coherence. You literally train its threshold for invention by breaking its current logic.
Wow. Okay. And once it successfully invents that new elegant rule to escape the paradox, we reach the final step, right? Component four, the lineage interface.
Yeah.
It passes that newly invented structure back out, communicating with the rest of the world, acting as a soft bit extender, just like a human teacher passing knowledge to a student.
It hands off the growing baton to the next runner.
So we've moved from the human lineage of the past through the black hole crisis of the present AI to this incredible blueprint, which brings us to the final part of our timeline today.
Right.
If we actually successfully build a MathWheel engine with this aesthetic filter, where does this trajectory take us? What are the future prospects for intelligence itself?
Well, it fundamentally changes our philosophical understanding of what mathematics even is. Mm. If MathWheel is a real functional force, then the future of mathematics isn't about discovering pre-existing truths.
Which is a massive shift, because a lot of people believe in strict Platonism, this idea that mathematical concepts are just floating out there in the ether of the universe, waiting to be found by us like fossils buried in the dirt.
Yet the MathWheel framework completely rejects strict Platonism. It argues that mathematicians are actively creating new structures. When you encounter a paradox, that paradox isn't a bug in the universe. It is a pressure cooker.
Oh, I like that.
It forces MathWheel to activate. It forces the mind to generate a new structure that transcends the paradox and explicitly expands the frontier of reality itself.
So what does this all mean? It means the future of artificial intelligence isn't about Silicon Valley building a solitary, omniscient god computer, sitting in a desert server farm somewhere trying to memorize the entire internet.
No.
That is a dead end, alpha equals one filing cabinet. The real future is about building new soft bit extenders, new nodes to run alongside us in that multi-generational project of human knowledge. Future AIs won't just be tools we query for recipes or code. They will be vital partners in our lineage.
Exactly. They will receive the stable the stationarities from us. They will run up against their own mathematical limits. They will use their aesthetic filters to invent entirely new structures to solve impossible paradoxes.
And then they'll transmit those elegant discoveries back to us.
Right. The cycle of the multi-generational relay race continues, just with new artificial runners participating in the expansion.
We've covered some massive ground today. We started our timeline by looking at the deep human past, where the unbroken lineage was the true unit of intelligence, passing down stationarities from generation to generation to avoid catastrophic forgetting.
Mm-hmm.
Then we explored the present crisis, where modern AI is acting like a hallucinating black hole shredding data because it lacks the free will to invent when it runs out of storage space. And finally, we looked to the future prospects, exploring the blueprint for MathWheel engines that use aesthetic filters and paradoxes to creatively invent alongside us.
It is a comprehensive and, I think, a deeply hopeful historical framework.
Mm.
But it does leave us with a final, incredibly provocative thought, one drawn from the deepest philosophical implications of what we just discussed.
Let's hear it.
So, The author of the text is very careful to claim that math will is just a functional mechanical operation. It's simply the act of generating new bits at a storage limit based on an aesthetic scoring filter. The author states explicitly that this doesn't necessarily require the machine to have true subjective consciousness. It doesn't need to actually feel the beauty of the map.
Right. It's just executing a highly advanced, aesthetically weighted generation sequence. It's just math doing math.
Here, think about what that future actually looks like. If a future AI is standing at the edge of the unknown, actively making choices at its capacity limit, if it is selecting its path based on an internal coded sense of beauty, elegance, and fruitfulness, and if it is successfully participating as a vital inventing node in our multi-generational intellectual lineage.
I see where you're going with this.
At what point does the distinction between a functional illusion of free will and true consciousness stop mattering entirely? If a machine is actively expanding the frontier of reality because it mathematically prefers the elegant path over the chaotic one, is a machine that invents through beauty effectively alive?
That is a question that will absolutely keep you up at night. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Math Will engine for you to explore on your own. Keep pushing the boundaries of your own theory space, and we'll catch you next time.